You are listening to Thought Thief by K.E. Preston. Chapter 26, Trabok. Leaving. Rin's final word drifted around the room, tickling Trabok's ears like a winter wind. She was right. Of course she was right. They should have grabbed what they could and run from this room as soon as they had sniffed out Lithril's treachery. And yet, they had both stayed. Their own curiosity overriding their need for safety and survival. Rin was ready to leave. But Trabok...
Are you certain we have found everything?
He asked, rising to his feet as if rising out of a trance.
No,
Rin said, shaking her head and buckling her pack. But we have found what we could, and it is time to leave. Past time.
Is she hiding something?
Ethrol whispered, flickering into existence at Trabok's side. They were wearing Ren's face and dress from the party.
There must be more to this room than what the two of you have seen. I wonder why she is so eager to leave.
Trabok almost wanted to ask where they had been. Ethrol had been strangely silent, as his mind had been busy puzzling over the translation. However, now that he and Rin had the information, and it was time to act, Ethrol was all too happy to give their opinion.
Trabok, hurry,
Rin urged, striding towards the door.
Wait,
hissed Ethrol, moving like stuttering smoke to point into the hidden drawer.
What is that?
Rin, wait,
Trabok called, staring into the drawer.
What?
She almost screeched.
Have a look at this.
She marched back to his side, and together they peered into the drawer. A small, nondescript button was on its side, hidden by a rack of stoppered glass vials.
Push it,
Ethrol suggested, and without thinking, Trabok obeyed. Silently, a door swung open, hidden inside Lithril's bookshelves. Both Trabok and Rin gaped at the hole in the wall, leading to the dark beyond. The cool damp of the cave filled Trabok's nose, and power, real and untamed, danced across his skin.
You can feel that,
Ethrol said, shifting from Rin to the Fey girl and back again.
Feel the pull of that power.
And he could feel it, like a rope around the center of his being, pulling him forward. Trabok looked to his left and saw Rin walking towards the door, hand outstretched, the cool air from the cave and the energy it brought, causing the hairs on her arm to stand on end.
That is right,
Ethrol continued to whisper, switching faces in a frenzy from Rin to Varys to the Queen.
She can feel it too. You know what that feeling is? That call urging you forward.
Fate. The word rang through his mind. The insistent pressure of it, crushing reason beneath its feet. Fate wanted him through that door. Wanted both of them through that door. Destiny was drawing them forward. The circle was drawing closed. They were the last pieces to fall into place.
Fate.
Ethrol purred at his back, and even though he knew it was impossible, Trabok could have sworn he felt their breath on his neck. They were both so close now. Rin's toes right on the threshold. They were both where they needed to be. All she needed to do was step forward, and Rin stopped, then through gritted teeth snarled,
Fate can eat its own ass.
The world froze, his mind caught in an impossible moment.
What did you just say?
Trabok whispered, but Rin never answered. Instead, she slammed the door shut, grabbed him by the wrist and dragged him from the room, down the stairs, and into the servants' passage, erasing her marks and breaking her spell as she went.
Ren, slow down,
Travok said, yanking his hand away, the hall swaying and buckling in his vision, his ears hearing the ghost of a fiddle. There is no time to slow down, she shouted back. We have to get everyone out of here, tonight, right now. Me, you, the Queen, Seraphina, Varus, Elliot, Zithril.
Who is Elliot?
Travok tried to ask, but Rin was beyond hearing. Marcite, because mark my words, I am not leaving that child behind.
She is not listening to you,
Ithril sighed. Travok glanced to his side as they turned the corner and saw the Fey girl hovering there.
Though I suppose that is unsurprising, seeing as how no one really listens to you.
Do you think we could leave here within the hour? No, that's probably not realistic for 8 people, but I bet we could make it in 2. Rin continued to mutter to herself as they wound through the halls, paying Trabok almost no attention, murmuring her plans to herself.
Are you just going to do whatever she says? That does seem to be your habit.
Ithril mocked as they folded their appearance in on itself, and soon the Fey girl was gone, and Rin was standing in her place.
Do you think it is strange?
They went on.
How quickly she shut that door. How fast she pulled you from that room. You both felt the call. Why do you think she so desperately did not want you answering it?
Trabok's head was pounding, the lights were shrieking, and the tunnel was wavering in and out of focus.
She can read ancient Dimrashi. Even you cannot read ancient Dimrashi. How do you think she learned that?
They finally drew to a stop outside a random door, and Travok slumped against the wall as the hall around him continued to pitch and roll. Rin shot a look his way, seeming to see him for the first time since leaving Lithril's room. Keep it together, Travok, she said. And no matter what you see when I open this door, keep your opinions to yourself.
Yes, Travok. Keep it together, Travok. Keep your thoughts to yourself, Travok. There's a good boy, Travok.
Ithril mocked, their sing-song tone making his eyes vibrate in his skull.
Do not tell me what to do,
he growled. But whether or not Rin heard him, Travok had no way of knowing, because at that moment, the world stuttered and shifted again, throwing him out of Altair and back to the crossroads of Durandir. He bit down on his cheek hard, the pain forcing him back to the present and through the door. Travok stumbled into Rin's rooms to see her gripping Marcite by the shoulders, forcing the girl to look her in the eye. Marcite, a lot of things are going to happen tonight. I will take care of you the best I can, but right now, I need you to trust me and pack a bag for yourself. Can you do that?
Oui, demoiselle,
Marcite squeaked, and even Travok could see the fear starting to cloud the girl's eyes.
Now, Marcite,
Rin snapped, and the girl jumped and ran from the room, Rin on her heels. Zithril is not here, she called back to Travok as they both reached the door to the main hall. I will find him. You go fetch Brenora.
Here's a question, Travok,
Ithril said.
Why are you doing as she says? What are your instincts telling you? Because so far, what you know about this woman is that she's a liar. She knows magic, and she can read a dead language used by the Dimrashi.
Stop telling me what to do,
Travok grunted. Travok, we do not have time for this, Rin sighed, stepping into the hall. Now go find Brenora. Rin waved a hand to shoo him down the hall, and Travok snapped. He did not question or overthink or stop to breathe. He just reached out, grabbed her wrist, and pushed her into the wall.
Stop talking and tell me who you are,
Travok growled up at her. She shook her head, squinting against the pain of impact, and for a moment, he felt guilty. What was he doing? This was clearly an overreaction. Maybe there was still time to let her go, to explain. However, the quiet, sensible voice at the back of his head was quickly silenced the second Rin opened her mouth.
Well, which is it? Stop talking or tell you who I am, she groaned.
She is laughing at you,
Ethereal hissed in his ear, and again the room switched around him, changing from quiet, elegant hallway to the outer servant stairs overlooking the crossroads of Durandir.
Stop that,
he whispered to the ghost standing at his side. Stop what? Rin asked, slowly and cautiously, like she was trying not to spook a deer.
Lying,
he shouted, head snapping around to face her, shaking the visions of his home away from his eyes.
Stop lying, stop playing games, tell me why you are here.
Her gaze never flinched from his. She stared down at him with blank, unintimidated honesty. Travok, you know I am not planning anything nefarious. But something is coming. Remember what you translated, the spell. Your queen needs to know about the spell. Release me, and we can find her together.
She must think you are stupid,
Ethereal laughed.
You must think I am stupid,
Travok repeated.
I'm not letting you anywhere near the queen.
I think you are unwell, she pushed, sliding lower on the wall so they were standing eye to eye. It is the rift, Travok. We are all feeling it, and you look like a horse that has been ridden too hard.
She can do spells, Travok. Ask her about the spells,
Ethereal reminded him, lights dimming and flickering with their voice. Travok shook his head. There were too many distractions tonight. Ethereal, Rin, his own overworked and exhausted mind. Nothing would allow him to focus on what needed to be done.
You know spells,
he spat. Well, if that is not the pot calling the kettle black, Rin replied, rolling her eyes.
You used a Dimmick spell when we were fighting the Mashant de Nuit. You crippled its body.
Not what I was thinking of, but good point.
Ethereal chirped from his elbow. Rin gave a single laugh. I bound its legs. Are you always this dramatic?
What about the spell outside the door? How do you know a spell like that?
Travok continued to insist. It is my spell. I made it. Are you telling me you have never made a spell of your own? He had. Of course he had. Everyone properly trained in magic knew how to craft their own workings. But Rin was no mage.
I am a wizard and a defender of Durandir. I have earned my knowledge.
Rin glared at him with eyes of cold, unfeeling metal. It made his heart start to work its way up his throat. You'll be paying for that one, boy, chided a voice that sounded very much like Captain Halvar in the back of his mind.
You do not know me. You do not know who I am, what I am capable of, or what I have endured. So trust me when I say I've earned everything I have in this life, every spell and every scar.
How was it that he had her so thoroughly disarmed and disabled, yet it was he who was feeling scolded? What was he assuming about her? What gave him the audacity to assume it?
Oh, she is getting the better of you,
Ethereal scoffed, dancing around him, distracting him yet again.
Are you really going to let this mange-covered cat talk to you like this? Maybe you cannot help it. Maybe she is reading your thoughts.
Travok gritted his teeth and closed his hands tighter around Ren's wrists in an effort to block out Ethereal's taunts. He saw her fingers start to turn white from the lack of blood. He felt them flex against the pressure of his hands. But that was it. She did not cry out. She did not beg. Her eyes were still hard, and her voice had lost all sympathy.
Why did you say the word fate earlier?
What?
In Lithril's room, you said
that we should leave immediately, and I'm starting to wonder why you are dragging your feet.
No, no, she would not do this. She would not cut him off and trip him up to avoid telling the truth.
This was not even the only time she had stolen words from his head. She had done it earlier that night.
The thought slid into place, and Trevok felt his mouth go dry. He licked his lips, and in a cold whisper said,
"You called me striking earlier. You picked that word from my mind."
Rin raised one eyebrow, and her mouth gave a slight twitch of amusement. "I wonder why you are associating that word with me. Who were you calling striking in the privacy of your own thoughts?"
Trevok felt his ears start to go hot.
"Oh, you do not have to be embarrassed," she said, her voice cold and mocking. "I was quite taken with myself in that dress. I will not hold you to any lingering feelings of desire."
"Stop that."
"Stop what? Saying the truth?"
Stop. Just stop twisting things."
"I am not twisting things. I am speaking plainly. You are the one who keeps dancing around what I am being accused of."
"What are you?"
His question bounced down the hall and ricocheted off doors. The echoes made him notice for the first time how very empty the hallway was. Even the liveried servants had disappeared for the evening. They were the only two in the corridor, and they were standing so close that if someone were to glance in their direction, they might be mistaken for one person. One strange shape leaning against the wall. Trevok licked his lips again and tried very hard to keep his eyes locked straight ahead, his mind focused on the task at hand. It was getting harder than it should have been to concentrate. He silently cursed the distractions that were assailing him from every side as her strange, sweet scent reached up and tickled his nose. What was that? Honey and something else. Something with a bit more body. "I am a mortal, human woman who is becoming very uncomfortable with how close you are standing to me," Rin said, as dry as stale bread.
"That would be hard to prove,"
he replied, his voice coming out lower and hoarser than he meant it to.
"Oh, I think I could give you undeniable proof of how uncomfortable I am right now."
"Not that," he snapped. "How can you prove that you are human?"
"What else could I possibly be?" she shouted. "Do Seraphina and I share a complexion that I am not aware of? Is my skin glistening like gems in the firelight?"
Again, she had a point, and again he hated her for it. There had been stories, legends left over from the Great War, of Dimarosh that had such complete control over their bodies that they could take any form they wished. Shape-shifting demons that could wear the face of your lover and then murder you and your family in the dead of night. That, Trevok realized, was what he believed Rin to be. It was ridiculous, but he had come too far to back down now.
"Are you?"
he asked.
"Like Seraphina?"
Without answering him, she rotated her wrist, long, nimble fingers plucking the cufflink from his shirt free in one deft movement. She twirled the ornament around and then plunged the point into her thumb without ceremony. The cufflink fell to the floor with a hollow tink, and Rin squeezed out a small drop of blood.
"Gods surround me,"
Trevok swore as he watched in humiliated horror as a red dot glistened on Rin's pale skin.
"Red, plain red mortal blood," Rin said, flat and unmoved. "Not Dimmock gold, or whatever would ooze out of Varys if you cut him. Just red. And that means..."
That meant he was going insane. That meant he could not trust his instincts. That meant he had taken an innocent woman, thrown her into a wall, and then ranted at her for a solid minute before coming to his senses.
"She knows too much,"
a thrall hissed in a voice like wind. A voice he had not heard since his youth. Their true voice.
"Imagine if she told the queen how you had been acting. Imagine if everyone knew you were mad. If everyone found out about me. You will have to dispose of her, Trevok. She knows too much."
His whole soul revolted at those words. His body went rigid, and the blood left his head in a dizzying rush.
What have you done?
Trevok gasped, as much to himself as to a thrall. They had been prodding him, pushing him, pressing him in a dozen little ways, teasing him, taunting him, distracting him with forced memories and changes in lighting. Why? What did they want from him? They already shared his mind. Did they want his free will as well? Was that what this was? A test to see how far they could get him to bend?
The wall,
he muttered to himself. Yes, I am still on it, Ren replied. But Trevok had gone somewhere far away. Why had he not brought up the wall? Why had he just let a thrall run wild down these halls? He looked back at Ren, preparing to apologize, but before he could, she blinked out of existence. Not just her, but all of Altair disappeared from his sight and from his mind. One minute, he was a mortified man alone in a hallway, and the next he was a young 30-year-old boy on a rickety balcony, looking out onto the lights of Durrandir, with a young fey maiden wrapped in his arms.
Kiss me,
she whispered to him, and who was he to refuse? Trevok bent closer to the fey girl that had dragged him giggling onto the dance floor. She was so beautiful, beautiful in an impossible sort of way, beautiful like light passing through clouds at dawn, beautiful in a way a boy like him should have never been allowed to touch. But he was touching her, and she was so very close. But something was not right. Her hands should have been around his neck, not hanging in the air. And her smell was wrong. She was supposed to smell like rosemary and garlic. This woman smelt like...
Sandalwood?
Trevok asked, before his arms were jerked apart and his head was pulled forward, sending his nose cracking into something hard and unyielding. His stolen night on the balcony disappeared, and the hallway spun back into its place. Trevok could taste his blood before he could feel its warmth through his beard. He dropped Ren's hands to feel for the break in his nose. This turned out to be a mistake, because the moment her hands were free, Trevok felt Ren grip his shoulders and drive a knee straight into his groin. He stumbled back, his mind so flooded with pain that his body did not know what to do. His hands traveled from his nose to his crotch and back again. He dropped to his hands and knees, wheezing in pain as some invisible demon gripped his insides and started twisting. His head felt like an egg cracked open, and for a moment he imagined it was yolk splattering onto the marble beneath him.
You bitch,
he said, pushing the words past the rising nausea in his throat. You dog, she spat through gritted teeth.
I was about to apologize,
he groaned as he pushed himself back onto his knees.
Oh, is that what they're calling assaulting women in empty corridors nowadays?
Ren asked, rubbing at her arms where he'd been holding her.
You could have broken my wrists, you were squeezing so hard.
Well, you definitely broke my nose,
he grumbled from the floor.
Was that your head or the wall you sent me crashing into?
The wall. I'm not getting a headache just for the sake of teaching you manners.
You teaching me manners?
Trevok scoffed, mopping at his nose with the arm of his coat.
Yes, she sniffed. Did you learn any?
Well, I definitely learned not to back you into a corner.
Good.
Just consider this me driving the point home, she said, gesturing vaguely to where he sat kneeling before her. Ren squinted at him and asked,
Are you feeling better?
By which Trevok knew she meant,
Do you have enough control over your mind for me to let you stand back up?
Trevok opened his mouth to answer, but never got the chance.
Trevok!
Cried a voice meant to shake the mountains to their knees. Ren and Trevok both snapped their heads to the end of the hall, where Varys, the Queen, and Zithril were running towards them at full speed.
She's gone!
Varys panted, panic bubbling off him like a pot boiling over.
Seraphina is gone!
Chapter 27. Seraphina. Seraphina walked towards the light at the end of the tunnel. With every step she took, She became more desperate to leave, more willing to take any door that might lead to freedom. She started to run down the endless corridor, footsteps eerily quiet against the still rippling floor. Flashes of color in her periphery caught her eye as she ran, little snatches of light and sound. She glanced towards one of the arches and instinctively understood what it was.
Memories?
Serafina whispered as she slowed her frantic pace, mesmerized by the scenes playing out around her. Through one archway stood a shaded forest. Through the next, a thunderstorm was lashing against the panes of a window. They were not her memories. They felt wrong in her head, like beautiful shoes that were too tight for her feet. But they were real in a way that made them more than a dream, familiar in a way that made Serafina sure they belonged to someone. As she passed by one of the archways, the boy and girl from the ballroom caught her eye. They lay on opposite ends of a couch in a sun-drenched courtyard, their backs against the arms of the sofa, their legs stretched out in front of them, feet touching as they tried to push and kick each other onto the cobblestone floor.
L'étoile, z'étoile,
called an unseen woman's voice.
It is time for lessons.
At this, the boy fell off the couch into a clumsy heap of knees and elbows. The girl collapsed into a fit of giggles, and Serafina moved on.
You are such a clever girl,
said a voice like wind, as the girl with black curls stood on the stone floor.
Such a beautiful, clever girl, to hear my call all the way from the mountains.
The girl was older here. But if by a few years or a few decades, Serafina wasn't sure. She looked young and fragile, standing barefoot in a cave, wearing nothing but a nightdress, her hair tied up in rags as she boldly declared,
I have come here to learn, to gain power.
Why would you need power, sweet child?
The voice hissed as it wrapped itself around her. Shadows turned. And lights flickered as the girl's skirts flapped in the breeze.
No, you do not have to tell me. Let me guess. Your father? He does seem to be the type. And after all, you are so beautiful.
At those words, the girl broke in half, falling to her knees, holding her middle. Crippling under the weight of a secret spoken out loud.
There, there,
cooed the voice, and Serafina could have sworn she saw hands cradling and stroking the girl's head, a cool light playing over her hair.
When I am done with you, you will know such power, and you will never fear another soul as long as you live.
Serafina moved on, past parties, lessons, and dinners, voices calling out to her from the memories framed in stone. She stopped at a random arch. It was a bright sitting room, with a table set for breakfast. There sat the dark-haired girl, next to the King of Altair, his skeletal features softened and rounded with youth and health. He leaned forward to tenderly sweep one of the girl's dark curls off her shoulder, smiling as he bent to whisper in her ear. The girl stiffened, flinching away, and as she did, the king's expression darkened into a scowl.
Your mother is so tiresome,
he said, leaning back in his chair to cut at the meat on his plate.
She is jealous of you, you know. That is why she always filling your head with such lies. She sees your beauty and misses what she once was.
The door opened somewhere out of sight, and the girl's head snapped towards the noise, eyes begging for an escape.
L'étoile,
a woman's voice sang, and the girl sprang to her feet.
Please, come with me.
No, L'étoile, please stay with me,
slurred the king. As he softly covered her hand with his.
I am lonely, so she will stay and keep me company. That is, unless you want to join me, Bella, help cure my loneliness.
Faster than a snake striking a mouse, A tall, gorgeous woman leapt into frame, threw the king's hand off the girl's wrist, slammed his arm back against the table, pinning it there with a knife through the sleeve of his coat. The plates and cutlery rattled with a sudden impact, and the king glared in rage and surprise from his trapped wrist to the woman in front of him.
"For be damned, Bella!"
he growled through bared teeth.
"I am tired of your threats, Ferge, so I will make you a promise."
The woman, Bella said, with a calm and steady voice that did not reflect the shaking of her hands. Serafina could not help but notice similarities in the two women. They had the same black hair, the same opalescent skin, the same proud, pointed nose. But the elder had clearly been marked by time with a harsh hand. There was a hardness to her, an inflexible resilience that no makeup or well-polished breeding could disguise.
"Touch her again? Touch either of them again, and by rage, I swear I will kill you.
You are being unreasonable."
The king's words sloshed over his lips.
"She is a child, our child."
The queen spat, fury burning through her last words.
"By the gods, Ferge, it is only the crown that keeps me from killing you now. This will be your only warning."
Serafina stumbled back, bracing herself against the stone of the wall as the next scene started beside her. There stood the girl on the very cusp of becoming a woman. She was in the cave again, but this time she was dressed in red and gold ruffles, as her black hair was held in place by elegant combs accented with pearls.
"How many emissaries?"
the bodiless voice asked.
"Four, with a fifth coming tomorrow,"
the girl answered as she started to pace back and forth. "We always knew this was a possibility," came a dry voice. Serafina choked out a gasp as she saw the man from the ballroom leaning against the far wall, rolling his cane between his hands.
"If a match is struck, she will send me away that very night if she can,"
the girl went on, biting at the side of her nail as she continued to walk.
"She will never be able to see your potential, that your place is here with us,"
the voice said, dripping from the walls. Serafina blinked and shook her head. Was the light playing tricks on her, or was there a face floating over the girl's shoulder?
"I know what I must do," the girl went on, "and I will.
It will be a great honor to be the one to start the widening, to be the first sacrifice to weaken the reality,"
the voice whispered. "I could teach you my recipe. That way she will not put up a fight," the man offered from his back corner. Then he raised his head, looked directly into Serafina's eyes, and winked. Serafina jolted back, tripping over her hem, scrambling down the hall towards the light. She had to get out of this place, this endless hall of memories and heartaches that weren't hers to hold. On and on she ran till finally she broke free from the hall. It was like coming up for air after being held underwater. Serafina gasped and spun under the night sky, dead grass crunching under her feet. The forest was at her back, and before her stretched miles and miles of barren, desolate land. And there stood the girl and her mother. The girl was in an elegant sky-blue robe, belted at its waist with a sash and embroidered in a gold, twisting, sharp pattern. She looked like a priestess, standing straight, knife resting in her hand, robe pooling around her feet as she stared at her mother's back.
"It's all right, Mama,"
said the girl to her mother as the older woman balanced on the lip of a cliff.
"It will be all right. I have taken care of Father. He will not hurt us anymore."
Bella's back was straight as her toes dangled out into nothing, her fingers twitching at her side.
"I have gotten so much stronger since training with my teachers. I wish I could have told you about them before now, but I was afraid you would take them from me."
The queen's hair was down, black curls tangling in the wind, mud coating her bare feet and hem of her chemise. Serafina could see symbols sketched along her neck and down her back, elegant, sharp little markings painted in black ink.
It is an honor, you know, to be the one to start the reckoning,
the girl said, repeating the promises of her teacher.
I love you so much. I am so glad that I can give you this one last gift, this last honor.
A small squeak came from the queen. Did she know? Serafina wondered. Was that noise her trying to beg for her life? Or was that just the ragged breathing of her body?
I love you, Mama. Please, step forward.
And that was all it took. Serafina watched in horror as the late Queen of Altair placed one foot out into empty air and then tipped over the ledge.
No!
Serafina shrieked, rushing past the girl, over the edge of the cliff, down to chase a woman who had been dead longer than Serafina had been alive. She fell for what felt like hours, headfirst, skirts being pulled behind her by the force of the wind as she stretched out her hand in a hopeless quest. Bella spun as she fell, pitching this way and that, like a woman thrashing against the sheets in her bed, caught in a dream battle that she would never win. When she hit the ground, she hit it hard. A wave pulsed out from the queen's body. She was a stone being thrown into a pond, ripples traveling out from her impact as she slowly sank below the surface. Time slowed, and Serafina's perception changed as the queen started to disappear into the rock. She could clearly see Bella's face now. She could see the blood trickling from the woman's eyes, nose, and mouth. She could see that the markings on the queen's back stretched over her face and chest. She could see the blood mixing with the fresh ink, smudging her daughter's work. As red touched black, the writing started to glow, turning into cracks that grew out from the queen's face and torso, sinking into the ground beneath her. Little black slashes in the earth that released purple light. Time resumed its normal speed, and Serafina flew towards the ground. It was all she could see now. Gray, rough rock, waiting to welcome her into the unknowable void. She threw up her arms and braced for the end as she instinctively flinched back from her own death.
You've been listening to Thought Thief by K.E. Preston, narrated by K.E. Preston. Thought Thief is also available in paperback and ebook at kepreston.net. If you've enjoyed what you've heard, please consider leaving us a review or even sharing this with a friend. If you've really enjoyed what you've heard, there is bonus content available on our Patreon. Every dollar there allows me and my family to keep doing what we love, which is sharing this story with you. Thought Thief is recorded and edited by me, K.E. Preston, with editing help from Hanson Lyman and Mark Gardner. Thought Thief is a work of fiction written by K.E. Preston, with developmental editing and linguistics help by Amanda Berry. Thought Thief is a Lit Lab production. Thank you for listening.